Voyage.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about a new show just released on Voyage Media called Conversations with Men I Wish I Never Had. This is a podcast where former Master Mariner and Navy Lieutenant Commander Adina Grundy has candid, raw, cathartic, and often surprisingly funny conversations with women about their experiences in traditionally male-dominated fields, like the Navy, the Merchant Marine, and Police Force. These are the types of conversations that you might only privately have with your girlfriends, but we are sharing them for you to listen to. If you're someone who has ever had an experience working as a woman in a male-dominated field, we think you will find a lot to relate to and commiserate with. Be prepared to laugh, cry, and be entertained. The first couple of episodes are already available, and we will be releasing new episodes every week. Check out Conversations with Men I Wish I Never Had where you get your podcasts.
Hello, my neighbor Gajodar was driving really weird in front of me, swerving and speeding. I was wondering if you could check on him. He's such a great guy, and I'm really worried something's wrong. Thank you! Katie and I watched, parked in the grocery store parking lot as they brought Gajodar out of his car and searched it. We saw them pull out the bag we'd placed in the trunk, and the police pulled out the bag of OxyContin pills, a donation from our ladies' tennis team. Then, when they pulled out the bag of weed and Katie's son, Trig's bong, I could see by Gajodar's wild gesticulating that he was fighting for his life. He had no idea where that stuff came from, and it absolutely was not his. The police officer was shaking his head as another cop car pulled up behind them. He's heard every excuse in the book. I felt kind of sorry for Gajodar because we hadn't intended on getting him pulled over on the busiest avenue in town. Everybody was driving by on their way to church, honking and just slowing down to looky-loo at poor Gajodar. As Gajodar was put in handcuffs and put into the police car, we waved at him as they drove him away. You could tell by the look on Gajodar's face that he suspected we were behind this. But what else could we do? I mean, I'm all in favor of breaking barriers when it comes to creating a better society. But seriously, men just need to stay out of women's business, Gajodar. Leave the election to me and Joan.
Hi, Joan. It's Gajodar. Listen, I just wanted to let you know I've decided to pull out of the election. Something came up and I'm not going to be able to attend. Also, can you let Katie know I dropped a check to the Cypress Creek Homeowners Association mailbox of all my past due fines, parking tickets, noise complaints, too many yard ornaments. It's all paid in full and you can check me off the list and count me in as your most well-behaved neighbor. Wishing you the best of luck. Not that I'm taking sides. You're both fantastic and would make an excellent leader. Also, John, the police might be contacting you about some questions about me. There's been some kind of mix-up involving me and my wife. No need to get into details over the phone. But if you do talk to them, could you put in a few good words for me? I would appreciate it. Thanks, John.
The police released Gajodar after his wife's sister covered his bail the next morning. It didn't take Gajodar long to figure out that he needed to drop out of the race and keep his opinions out of our HOA. That left the president's race up to Katie and I. Exactly how God intended it to be. Later that night, after word had spread around town about Gajodar, Mark gave me an earful.
You've gone completely nuts, Joan.
Nope. I've never been clearer about anything in my life.
You're systematically alienating us from everyone in the neighborhood. All our friends, everyone we know.
Not everyone. There's Darla, Manny, and Betty.
You never spoke one word to them before all this.
We will be okay. You and me, the Perkins family, we will get through this. Some of our neighbors, they will not be okay. Sure, we can move, but they're stuck.
That's on them to work out. We have our own problems to focus on.
Now you're talking like the rest of them. These are our neighbors.
Is this about saving the neighborhood, or is this about you?
Betty just told me that she hadn't eaten in 2 days. And Darla and Manny's house just sits there infested with mold because they can only afford to put their house back together piece by piece with the help of their congregation.
I don't have it in me to save everyone, Joan. Only us.
Then save us, and I'll worry about everyone else.
Yeah, well, what exactly are you trying to save everyone from?
That struck a chord. What am I trying to save my neighbors from? Mark was right. Up until a few days ago, I really couldn't give a crap about them. Up until a few days ago, I was ready to pull up stakes and move to a whole other community, as far as I could from this one. It's not like we were even friends before this. I always tried to avoid Darla at the grocery store if I saw her. I never invited her over or to the tennis club. Why am I suddenly so interested in her? In them? Why? For heaven's sake, was I willing to put my neck out there and risk prison time for fraud? Stealing from Nancy's stock and giving it to Darla's rundown shack of a church? On the surface, it looks altruistic. Here is this middle-class white lady, so very fortunate in all things. But the hurricane wiped my family and I out. All the things we had collected over the years, the money we'd invested in material objects, were all gone. And we weren't ever getting that back. Even with flood insurance, there was a guarantee of that. And the way Cypress Creek works, you're judged by how you present yourself to the world. Before Harvey, nobody knew if I just carried that bag at the expensive grocery store but actually shopped at the co-op. Nobody knew the designer leather handbag was a pleather knockoff, that I got my hair cut for $20. We had bought our home on the lower ridge of Cypress Creek because we wanted a bigger house for less. If you bought on the upper ridge, you were paying $150,000 more for the same building. None of my friends acted like that was a problem until after I lost everything and it laid bare my actual lack. It laid bare that I am not of the upper ridge. I am a hanger-on. A wannabe. Well-meaning philosophers tell us that we are all equal, that no one is better than the next. But this is not true in Cypress Creek. We are defined by what we have or don't have. And so if I have nothing, that is what the tennis ladies think of me now. I am nothing. I might as well have been pulled away with the flood. And it really pisses me off. So, I'm running for president. Not because I want to help my community, but because I want to level the playing field. I want to remind those that are ready to move on that we are not. That we are still in need. That we are rebuilding our lives from ground zero. They cannot forget us or ignore us because it's inconvenient for them. I saw the way Katie and the tennis ladies looked at me the day I returned. As if I were a used-up piece of garbage they could discard. Election day, and Katie woke up early to make the rounds last minute before the polls opened.
Knock, knock, delivering some donuts to remind you how sweet it would be if you'd vote for me.
I didn't do much campaigning leading up to the election. I figured the opinions I'd shared at the meeting last week was enough to show our community where I stood. I wasn't going to bribe anyone with cheap pastries.
Knock, knock. Donut delivery.
What I did do, however, was follow Darla's lead in pulling up Katie's signs whenever she placed them in our neighborhood. I also saw Katie putting her Katie for President flyers into everyone's mailboxes. And once I knew she had moved on to the next street, I made sure to follow her path and pick them all up, dumping them into the gutter along the way. I know, you're thinking, what about littering in the gutter? But I couldn't run the risk of the flyers getting found in a trash can. She would have known immediately that someone was up to no good, and all signs would have pointed to me. Just as I tossed a handful of flyers down the gutter, I heard a voice behind me.
Joan? What are you doing?
Shit. Mark was following me. I was still holding a handful of Katie's flyers in my hand. Hey! Just cleaning up some trash around the neighborhood. Mark's eyes fell over the stack of Katie for President flyers in my hand. I watched as his eyes traveled down to the gutter, where there were at least 30 other flyers flapping in the wind.
You know that eventually feeds into the ocean.
Oh, I'm picking them up, not throwing them out. Mark reaches out his hand and takes the flyers from mine.
I just saw Katie putting these in everyone's mailboxes.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you'd think the woman had killed enough trees with those blasted signs. Every single day it's something else. Signs, door hangers, phone calls. Now this crap. I mean, how many does she need to get the message across? We have a shredder at the house. Come on. I know she's already been at least two other blocks.
Mark and I started heading up the street and around the corner, checking everyone's mailboxes and pulling Katie's flyers out of them. When I got to Betty's house, 80-year-old Betty was at the door as I was pulling the flyer out. She's lightning fast.
It's illegal to go through someone else's mailbox, Joan.
I am so sorry, Betty. Here, just put in this flyer back.
Oh, is that from that Katie girl? You can keep that. I don't even know the girl, and I'm so tired of seeing her face. I'm thinking of voting against her just because she bugs me so much.
Betty grabbed the flyer from me and ripped it in half. She handed it back to me.
There you go.
As I headed off her porch to the street, I turned and asked her, "You need a ride to the polls, Betty. Election's at 10 a.m.
What, with you? And let all those Upper Ridge vultures think I'm on your side. I'll be fine on my own. Thank you very much."
By the time Mark and I got to the rec center, the line outside to go in and vote was about 100 people long. I've never seen such a huge turnout. Betty was already there, in line, along with Darla and Manny, Nancy, and several other tennis ladies. Not present was Gajodar and his wife. Guess he was still working out the details at the police station. Katie was standing at the front of the rec center, and she was holding a bunch of pens and ballots. If you ask me, it's a little weird that the person running for president is also the one in charge of elections. But I honestly hadn't thought the details through, and I was glad for once that Katie was always so on top of things. If she hadn't been such a witch through this whole Harvey thing, maybe we could have been friends, and I would have supported the pool. But nope. Just stop thinking that way, Joan. You're at war now. No turning back. Excuse me, but isn't it weird for the president to be running her own elections? Shouldn't we have an impartial ballot counter at the very least?
We should, Joan, and that is not going to be you. Let's see.
Katie walked down the line of people waiting to go in to vote, looking them up and down in judgment. She slowed down in front of her son Trig, a stoner kid who lived with his parents on the Upper Ridge. Oh, hell no, he can't count the votes.
He's very honest.
Can he even count? Pick someone else a little more impartial. Katie turned to Betty, who was standing next to Trig.
Ma'am, you look like you're the most experienced in elections.
Is that right?
Could we count on you to count our votes and uphold democracy today?
What do I do?
Katie handed Betty the ballots and the pens.
Follow me. I will demonstrate by casting the first ballot today.
I watched through the window as she led her inside to a table and sat her down. I was impressed that she didn't try to say anything, persuade her in any way. Sometimes Katie can be fair, maybe even kind of nice. But again, I'm not going to think about that right now. Katie filled out the piece of paper while everyone watched through the window, and then she folded it up and put it into a slot on the top of a cardboard box with an American flag picture glued onto it. Katie turned and gave everyone standing outside watching her through the window a big thumbs up. Nancy and some of the other tennis ladies from the Upper Ridge applauded. Most people just kept staring. I was kind of struck by how emotional I felt about this. Me, running for office. My first official community office. I hope I win.
Vote for Katie. A vote for Katie is a vote for a real lady.
Oh, God. Heather is just awful. She's walking up and down the line of people, practically spitting her horrible chanting into their faces.
A vote for Katie is a vote for a lady. A vote for Joan will make you groan.
Oh, God. It was my turn to go inside to vote. I headed in and grabbed a ballot from the table. Betty wouldn't even look at me. She just stared off into space like her mind was completely out of it. How old was she anyway? She must have been at least 80. She lived on the Lower Ridge with me. Her husband, a prominent surgeon in the 80s and 90s, had died about 4 months before Harvey completely flooded her, taking out the first floor of her home. She had been living on the second floor of her house longer than we had, desperately trying to stick it out. Her adult daughter keeps coming around threatening to put her into assisted living or call APS. Sometimes I just wait outside her house to see if she walks by so I can make sure she's still alive up there. And now, she's our official vote counter, left to decide my fate. Betty. Betty. She snaps out of it.
What, girl?
How's it going in here? Any funny business?
Oh, I'm about to show you some funny business. Do your vote and fold up the paper, put it in the box, get out and let someone else in.
Embarrassed, I quickly balled up the ballot in my hand and shoved it into the small hole in the box. Betty glared at me as I scooted out of the room and back outside. The line was dwindling and I was feeling ill. I couldn't help but look over all the faces in the line. People I knew, some I didn't. Were they friend or foe? I was trying to read into each person's expression, but no one even offered a friendly glance my way. It was nearing 11 a.m. Polls were closing, and Betty would count the votes. As the last person came outside of the rec center, having cast our ballots, Katie called out,
"Only 2 minutes left. Has everyone voted?"
Suddenly, the sound of speeding tires came from around the corner. Everyone looked over to see a white sedan with none other than Gajodar, the guy who tried to take Katie and I out. Gajodar's sedan came up to a stop right in front of the rec center. We all stared as he and his wife stepped out of the car. Without casting even a glance at us, Gajodar walked towards the double doors of the rec center, his chest puffed up in false pride, his face red with what could have been rage or shame. Katie called after him.
Gaga, you're off the ballot.
I still have the right to vote.
And with that, we watched as he headed into the rec center and cast his ballot. Without another word or glance our way, he exited the rec center, hopped in his sedan, and drove away.
Time's up.
Katie knocked on the window where Betty was sitting.
Count up the ballots. Let's see who's the popular one.
She turned to me and gave me the biggest, brightest, most perfect smile. My heart sank. This was like being back in high school again. The only difference was that this was it. There's no graduating adult life and moving on to bigger and better things. If I don't win this election, Katie and the tennis ladies are going to give me hell.
Shall I go help her?
No! There was no way in hell Heather was going to help Betty. I wouldn't stand a chance of winning. I watched as Betty spilled the paper ballots from the box onto the table. She carefully unfolded each one. Reading the checked boxes on each paper, she stacked the count of ballots on two piles, presumably one pile for me and one for Katie. My heart was pounding as I watched her put two ballots on one pile, then one on the other. Which pile of ballots was mine? I looked around again at all my neighbors. People were just gathered together in their different friend groups, sipping coffee and laughing as they stuffed the donuts Katie brought into their mouths. Why didn't I bring donuts? Or better yet, kolaches. Those puffy bread rolls with long sausages and cheese stuffed into the middle. I knew for a fact more people liked those, and that might have bought me a few extra votes. But I couldn't because the money I would have spent on kolaches for the neighborhood was currently going to things like tiling and carpets for my whale skeleton house. No expense could be spared, not even for votes. I was going to have to rely on just sheer popularity. God, there goes Betty, making the piles again. How many times has she done it now? Three? Did they have to get the old lady to be the one to count ballots? Can she even remember how to count past five? She can hardly stand up straight, let alone who knows how her brain is operating. Can she even read English anymore? Oh, stop, Joan. You always get like this when you're under pressure. Finally, I see Betty stand and slowly walk outside to the rest of us.
The votes have been counted. It's Joan.
Say what?
I'm sorry. What did you say?
That one. Joan. She won.
You know, I really did spend some time imagining what if I had won, and what happened right after Betty's announcement didn't quite fit what was in my mind. On television after campaigns, you see big balloons and confetti floating around and large groups of people in t-shirts with the candidate's name, and they're holding up signage, and there's usually a lot of cheering and screaming and a candidate that's grinning a mile wide. But that wasn't the case at all with my win. When Betty announced I had won, there was just silence. People were just standing around, nodding in silence, and they continued stuffing donuts into their mouth. Like it was the last time they were going to eat donuts since the new president didn't do that kind of stuff. Actually, there wasn't total silence. My husband groaned loudly. He was pissed because it was just one more thing he was going to have to worry about taking me away from the renovations of the house.
Well, Joan, congratulations.
Katie walked over and handed me the board of director president's gavel. She looked really disappointed, even disgusted.
I still have the rest of the month to finish out my term, and then you officially take over in January. We can schedule a time next week to start transitioning you into the job.
She stuck out her hand. I took it, and instead of shaking my hand, she pulled me close and leaned into my ear.
I know you stole Nancy's money and gave it to Darla's church. And I know you've been pushing fraudulent FEMA applications through the city council. It's so nice of you to invest in the community.
What you did is securities fraud, Joan. I'm not going to let you get away with this. Now that you're president and in charge of the funds for the whole neighborhood, you'd better believe I'm going to make sure I'm keeping an eye on you. I've got plenty of spies. Who knows what kind of crap you'll pull next?
Who knows? Katie turned away in a huff and headed back down to Nancy and Heather. I watched as the other residents pile into their cars and head home. A few came over to me and shook my hand and wished me luck. Some even had a twinkle in their eyes, so I figure they must have voted for me. Betty came over to me.
Hey, Madame Prez, can you give me a ride home?
I thought you didn't want to be seen with a lower ridger.
Hey, you're the one in power now. Good to keep you close.
Betty and I climbed into my SUV. She looked out the window at Katie, who was being consoled by a couple of the tennis ladies.
Wasn't about to let that one have another 2 years to run this place.
What was the vote count anyway? Just out of curiosity.
You won. That's all you need to worry about.
I didn't like the tone of her voice. Something wasn't right. Betty, you counted the votes correctly, didn't you?
Oh, I counted them correctly, all right. Just didn't like my mayor.
What did you do?
Two of the ballots weren't clearly marked, so I tossed them.
Jesus, Betty. You threw the election? That's fraud. We gotta tell Katie right away. I moved my hand to open the door. Katie was just standing not 10 feet from me. I could tell her the truth and come clean. Betty grabbed my arm.
You're not going to change a thing. You're going to stay the president, and that's final.
I can't.
You can. You will. I don't want that Katie girl up my old ass about getting my house cleaned up. She keeps knocking on my door with her complaints about property value and causing my daughter to have a full-on panic attack about the elder abuse team getting called on. I want to stay in my house and be left alone, and you make sure I do just that.
And what if I tell everyone what you did?
I've got you on my Ring camera tampering with my mail. Now, I looked up the charges, and you'll get a year in jail if I turn you in for throwing away those flyers. Think about all the houses you hit this morning. You'll probably get more jail time than that. Plus, you know you get around 6 months added to that for illegal dumping of those flyers down the gutter.
I can't believe this. Betty patted my arm.
You know, if it doesn't work out, I've got the other ballots right here.
She patted her pocket.
I can turn things around right away. But I have a good feeling about you, and I'm looking forward to working with you over the coming years.
I look over at Katie and the other tennis ladies. Katie looks up at me and she gives me a small smile. I can't tell if it's friendly or if she's already planning against me.
Welcome to politics, Joan.
Politics indeed.
Cypress Creek is a production of Voyage Media. The series is produced by Nat Mundell, Robert Midas, Dan Benamore, and Laura Summers. Executive produced by Lynn Jenkins. Written and directed by Laura Summers, based on Hurricane Harvey, Overcoming the Chaos by Lynn Jenkins. The book is available on Amazon. A link is in the show notes. Edited, sound designed, and mixed by Joel Lippman. Original music by Derlis Gonzalez. Starring Carolina Bonetti as Katie and Annie Abrams as Joan. Additional cast credits available in the show notes. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you're listening, and subscribe now for future episodes.